Thank you very much. How does this work? Okay. No. I'm not going to send you right into the coffee break. You have to endure another presentation. I was asked on a very short notice, that was yesterday morning, whether I could jump in for Marco. And probably I will not exactly meet the title of the session, but in the end I would try to relate to it somehow. But I think from what I've heard from the previous presentations, there is a lot of to liaise to from the work that I will tell you about in a minute when the presentation comes up. Yes. And the title is What Is and What Should Be New in Mission-Oriented Policies. And mission-oriented policies have been alluded to in various ways in the past 1.5 days. So in a way, it is the most important but not the sole new way in how to think about policy. And elderly white men, as I am, and some of the presentations were given by the likes of me yesterday, tend to think about history in historical perspective, and so did I. I was even tempted to title this slide, There Is Nothing New Under the Sun, which would go back to the Book of Solomon, of the Old Testament. But innovation policy apparently does not go back so far. But from what we could probably see or we could depict as phases of policy approaches in the post-war period is that we started from mission-oriented policies. What I labeled here as classic mission-oriented approach, or more pejoratively, the old or traditional type of mission-oriented approach. And Jason just referred to this type when he alluded to mission-oriented policies as being of the command and control and planning type. And that was, in fact, the idea. It was, in a way, all in Vannevar Bush 1945. Why didn't we stick to that? Because apparently, in the very beginning, this was a very successful policy approach. It brought us about the atom bomb. It brought us about nuclear power plants. And what you have? Apparently, it seemed to fit to the time, which were basically governed by large technological systems for which centralized policy approaches were an appropriate answer. Why was this then later on abandoned, but not completely abandoned, as I might point you to? Because all through history, policies are there never to go away, because they are a specific answer to a problem or a type of a problem which in societies can last very long. So we find classic mission-oriented policies all the way through to the present. But later on, when this approach was on the basis of the seeming success it had in its early applications, governments were tempted to apply it to other areas as well. And so they started to think about strategic industries, national champions, specific technologies of strategic importance to economic development. And they had the idea to apply this concept to key civil technologies. There, the approach did not fare as well, and failure started to mount, basically because governments were not particularly well in second-guessing the markets or picking winners. There were cases of success, but there were equally quite large failures. So this approach was later succeeded by the advent of the innovation systems approaches on all levels, on the national level, on the regional level, on the level of technologies. And the basic idea of that was it's not the direction that governments or any other central agency can ascribe to the development of technologies, but it's rather the interplay of actors and the smooth functioning of this interplay that should be at the core of policy. So that was really a paradigmatic shift. But recently, there has been some dissatisfaction rising with this approach, and especially when it came to addressing grand societal challenges, we found there are some limits in this approach. Also, already the last framework program of the European Union, Horizon 2020, tried to address grand societal challenges, only to find out, as the evaluations have revealed, that there was not much progress. There was progress in accumulating knowledge in the various areas, but there was not much, or at least it was felt this progress was insufficient in terms of getting closer to solutions or putting this knowledge into practice, into operational policies. There was much less perception of we are fast enough in approaching this. And therefore, a discussion started. It was not the sole initiative in this vein, or it was not the sole starting point for this discussion, but it is a very important part of the discussion. How do we, for the next framework program for Horizon Europe, design the framework program so that we can achieve missions? That is, we have set targets, we have set ourselves goals. On various levels of aggregations, we have been pointed to the fact that for a lot of grand societal challenges, we do have formulations of goals, like the sustainable development goals. But it is also apparent that these goals are formulated on a way that is not being operational for policy. So it has to be broken down on disaggregation levels, which would lend themselves to be translated into concrete policy targets. And therefore, the dissatisfaction with the limits of each and every of these historical approaches led to the development of a new one. And this is not going full circle, and insofar there is actually something new under the sun, as we are not going back to the old mission orientation, but worlds have become more complex ever since the Second World War. The problems that policy are addressing are much of a much broader scope. So there needs to be a new type of mission. And this is what I'm going to talk about, because we were asked by the European Commission to look into the empirics of the development of missions. I jumped through the slides. You can have them all in the end. We were asked to look empirically into the historical development of missions and give them advice on how to design mission-oriented policies on that basis. And these are the two reports that came out of these studies. And when you talk, when you are being given the task of tell me what the mission is and what should I do about it, is like nailing jelly to the wall. Because when we started, mission meant everything to everybody. And it's in fact very hard to nail down, because what we found that was the starting assumption in the first place, but what we found also in our empirical work was that there are various kinds of missions of all sorts. But in trying to identify empirically missions, we categorize different dimensions, starting from directionality, whether a policy initiative is linked to a societal challenge or to industry transformation, the intentionality, whether there is a specific well-articulated goal, the scale is important, also the mixture of public and private funding, whether the initiative aimed or at least implied a systemic or transformative change, where it did focus on the lower or the higher ends of the technology readiness levels, the number of disciplines that are being called into play, and the type of actors that are involved in the policies. And also the application areas are important, because we found that very many of the large-scale societal goal-oriented missions do have implications to a great number of industrial sectors, for that matter. Now we looked into having this framework for operationalization. We looked into roughly 200 initiatives that could potentially be called a mission. And we were also asked to have as broad geographical coverage as possible, beyond the EU even. And we also covered a lot of areas. This is just to give you some idea of the case studies that we went to in depth in the final stage of the process, where we were identifying some of initiatives that were more to the core of the definition than others, while elements of these operationalization dimensions were present in quite a number of initiatives. Really, what we would call mission is not very prevalent. So what we found very often is initiatives addressing societal challenges at large, but for example, failed to put up concrete targets or that have very coherent policy settings. They were mostly initiatives or calls for bottom-up initiatives in a specific sector. So we went through a number of case studies. I'm not going into that. It's just to give you an idea that we covered both very old ones, like the Apollo project or Airbus or Concorde, some which didn't even have a very large R&D component, like the Dutch Delta Plan, which is the plan to secure the Dutch coast against floods, like the one they experienced in the mid-60s. But that was a very concrete mission they had. From arranging until very recent ones, from which the success could not be estimated at this point in time, like some initiatives in electric or autonomous driving or changes in the energy base of a society. So this is just to give you an idea of what we have been looking at and what are the categories that we have been using. What we found that mission-oriented policies has been an evolving concept, and it came in various disguises. The old and new one is the distinction I referred to already, the new one being broader, being addressed to societal problems, which then in turn would have to be broken down into sub-targets, sub-programs, not like the one man to the moon that was a clear mission with one goal and a few instruments which could be realized in a centralized way, not so with the new ones. And also in terms of breadth, a narrow versus broad definitions, or even umbrella initiatives, like large-scale initiatives like the Energiewende or the high-tech strategy, which had elements of mission orientation, but mission orientation wasn't the whole story about the initiative. And finally, and that's the current terminology that the Commission uses, a distinction between accelerators and transformers. That is, accelerators would roughly be the more narrow, more science and technology oriented missions, like combating a specific epidemic until a defined year, or developing a specific technology until this in this or that period, while others, the transformers, would rather be the mission orientations that would lead to transformative change. But with all this diversity, I think it's fair to say that there is a core of a concept, and that has, this definition has entered the Commission documents ever since. So with mission, we understand large-scale interventions aiming at a clearly defined goal or a solution within a well-defined time frame with an important R&I component. That reflects the interests of the client, of course, because we were given this task by DGRTD. From the examples that I alluded to, you could see that there are a lot of in which R&I is not the core part, nor even the major driver of a mission. For example, the Delta Plan, of course, there is an R&D component in it, but it is not the most important part of it. And this already leads to the governance problems that are associated with it. Because when you think of it, in very many cases, the targets that are being set and the policy drive must come from other areas than from research and innovation policy. And I'll tell you an anecdote how far we are from that. When we had the kickoff meeting for this project, we found ourselves in a room with only people from DGRTD. And even they, some of the departments, apparently met for the first time. So that is probably not the best starting point for mission-oriented policies as we have in mind. So with all the characteristics that we find, we see a lot of similarities of the new mission orientation policies with other types of systemic policies. They are often cross-disciplinary, in fact, affecting a number of industrial sectors and social contexts. They need a great mix of different policy instruments to be effective. R&D alone not being sufficient to achieve mission targets. They involve public-private partnerships. And this they have in common with a lot of other systemic policies. But what distinguishes them is the directionality and the intentionality. And the question has been put forward, are we in the position as governments to provide this directionality and intentionality that, I think that's an agreement that I have heard often corroborated, cannot come from market forces? Are we as societies and via our government and political apparatus able to define such goals which have enough political legitimacy, and are we able to implement them? And this sounds like a technical debate among experts of government and scientists, but in fact, I believe it's much more serious, because I think in the answer to this problem lies our political future. in a nutshell. Because if we as societies are not capable to reach these targets, of which we all agree, or at least most of us would agree, that they are pressing ones, sometimes existential ones, and if our political systems fail, and other political systems are or are perceived as being more successful in being able to implement such policies, then we have a real legitimization problem of our current political systems as compared to, for example, China. One of the presentations yesterday was a very impressive show of the diffusion of electric cars in China, and the presenter in the end asked, what does this tell us about the political clout to implement such policies? And it would be good if we would not have to choose between the political system of China, but we would be able to develop, to pick up on Eric's notion, that we develop our own version of democratic centralism, which would allow us to implement such policies. And that is the big feat. In the end, we were also asked by the client to do the impossible, and via all these diverse observations of reality, to come up with general conclusions. And this is our bold attempt, and you might argue, and there are counterexamples to each and every one of these conclusions, but I think they capture an essence. The question is whether this essence is just a look into the rear window, or it also tells us something about the future and what we can learn from the past in this respect in designing new mission-oriented policies. What we found is that successful mission-oriented policies always emerge from a sense of urgency. The Dutch had no chance as to come up with a very concrete policy, very long-term commitment of resources, definition of a specific agency and even a ministry to install this, because next time half of the country would be flooded. That's a sense of urgency. But, for example, and we might have different perceptions of the sense of urgency of climate change, but I would rather go along with what Jan yesterday said. I think this is it's rather sooner than later that we will see severe effects in terms of changes in land that is feasible for agriculture, in climate catastrophes that will lead to migration caused by climate change. And we have to react to it now. And this has been laid out. And there is no scarcity of scientific evidence and even goal formulation. In this respect, it's only the matter of translating this into governance structures and policy actions by which we could reach this mission. That is no small feat, as we all experience. But a sense of urgency helps there. If one wants to write the political economy of mission-oriented policy, a catastrophe is a good start point. Or the perception that you are losing out in international competition, which was one of the drivers of the Apollo project, or in any arms race. Then there must be a fertile ground in terms of scientific and industrial capacities and political and cultural environments. And that is where I would have an issue with what has been presented by Jason, because I think new mission-oriented policies must look into the capacity building on the scientific side, must look into the ecosystem of business that is supportive to the developments which would help you reach the mission. There one of the dangers that we know from the past, and I don't know which of the Chinese policies sooner or later will fall into this trap, will be that there can be great leaps forward, but quite often you end flat on your face when you try it. So it needs a good system to reach a mission. And then there are some general findings which I think are pertinent for each and every design of mission-oriented policies. There must be a long-term direction towards and the commitments to clearly identified missions. And this is mainly a problem that political scientists, which I would have to have had more in the room, and other fields or administrative sciences even, because how to garner and how to corroborate such long-term commitment towards the clearly identified mission is a political problem. And quite often we found, and that is probably the thing that is has to be debated with view to future designs of mission-oriented policies, that successful missions are managed by clearly identified and empowered governance body. In the past, in the old types of mission, this very often has been a dedicated agency plus dedicated research and regulations institutions. You have a NASA, you have a DARPA, and then things work. The question is, in approaching broader societal missions, can this be the case, or do we have to find other governance solutions? And our conclusion was the past is only partly helpful in designing the future, but some of these principles should have to be respected. But new forms of governance are definitely needed, especially when we talk about this transformer type of missions. They must be experimentally discovered. We are not in the knowledge. We don't see them yet. So it's not a matter of just mimic a good practice example that we see somewhere. And especially when it comes to societal problems that stretch beyond borders, we did not find any successful example of mission-oriented policies. There are, of course, successful examples of scientific collaboration and running of joint infrastructures internationally, but in addressing missions, we are still lacking this. And that what we found is examples on the regional and national level of functioning policies. But when it comes to the international level, we lack this. And the European level is such an international level where in most policy areas, the member states would have to forego political competences to be re-established at the European level in order to arrive at the sensible setup, institutional governance setup to carry out the mission. And this is a major would require a major step by many national politicians. Citizens' engagements, in what we looked at in the case studies, sometimes this was a factor contributing to the success. In other cases, it was not. And yeah, the policy mix, and this is really the end, varies between the types of missions. And here we definitely said to our client, no, we cannot give you any general recommendation because it's different, the governance and the policy mix, between health or energy and what you have. And they have to be found at this level. But I have the feeling that in terms of policy instruments, and that is the attempt to relate to the topic of the session, we don't have to really invent much because if you look at the inventories of policy measures that the OECD is regularly producing, the most advanced countries, you find all the boxes ticked. You have most of the instruments that are around in the most advanced countries represented to some extent. What is lacking probably on the European level is procurement, and we besides all the talk about innovative public procurement, we have made only small progress in this direction. And I think we have to change something here, because this is probably a distinguishing that distinguishes Europe as a policy level from the possibilities that other countries do have at their hands. But having said that, in terms of instruments, I don't think that we need a radical new innovation, but the recombination of existing things, of existing instruments, it can be an innovation. And it is an innovation that we have to address very consciously, because currently, and I can point you to the latest edition of the SDI Outlook, we find a development in completely the other direction. What we find is most financing streams in the past 10 years or so have been directed through tax credits or indirect support to R&D, and they lack directionality, not by definition, because you could design tax credits that do have a thematic approach, but mostly they are, of course, not. So what we see in the past 10 to 15 years is a move away from directionality to broad and almost unconditional support. So we have to change this, and a change in the mix of policies, but not in the invention of new instruments. But most of all, where we have to be innovative is governance. Thank you very much.